We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes.
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Ayo, welcome into the CHGO White Sox postgame show presented by PointsBet. Use promo code CHGO when you sign up to get two risk-free bets up to $2,000. Welcome into Studio B of our CHGO offices here in the West Loop of Chicago. I'm the host of the CHGO White Sox podcast, Sean Anderson. Follow me on Twitter at Sean_W_Anderson. And with me today is Herb Lawrence.
Hello.
You can follow him on Twitter at EchnerWall23. He's the CHGO White Sox community leader. And for the first time in 8 games since September 18th, it's currently September 29th, we are coming to you after a White Sox win. The White Sox win 4-3 in Minnesota. They lose 2 out of 3 against the Twins, but thankfully snap the 8-game losing streak that they were on, and that ties or gives the Sox 2 losing streaks of 8 this year, which is a banner year for them, Herb.
Awesome year. Good job, White Sox. And I guess good fight today. Today's game was boring as yesterday's game, but they happened to score more runs than the Minnesota Twins, who made that clutch error at the end of the game with Nick Gordon dropping the ball to give hustling Mark Payton a job second base, and then the White Sox eventually drove him in. So it was good to see that the White Sox finally took advantage of other people's mistakes, and so... yeah, I win as a win. 77th win of the year.
Hey. DR says the headline was Sox win a game. Not sure why, but it's funny. It is funny. It's just hilarious. I mean, someone called in our pregame back before game one, the Sox will score 7 games in this series. Close. They scored 8. So, I mean, it's just funny. It's just bad baseball that we're watching. There were some interesting things in this game. I think it was probably the most interesting game out of the 3 that we've seen. But that's not saying much because it was like watching laundry dry.
It's just so, I'm so happy that we're 6 games away. I cannot fathom another 6 games past this. Like, even if they won the AL Central, I'd be like, I don't even want to watch the playoff games. Just,
I don't want that.
This team is just, ugh.
Yes.
And some people say unlikable. I don't know necessarily unlikable, but their brand of baseball is unwatchable. I don't know.
Well, they're uninspiring. I mean, and we saw that with Rick Hahn. I mean, Rick Hahn obviously didn't find this team super inspiring to add at the deadline. The only addition was Jake Diekman.
And all the good stuff that Elvis Andrus has done, he used it all for that time because he hadn't got a hit in ever. I think he's like 0-21 now.
Well, he said that the Guardians were going to crumble, and it just seems like he's crumbled.
He has definitely crumbled. And I'm glad he's still posting in the first as the leadoff batter up there. He doesn't, take days off. I hope for these last 6 games, these guys get their stats right. I want to see Aloy in the game a little bit more. Saw him pinch hitting today for these last 6 games. No reason to rest these guys unless they ask out. Of course, Johan's hurt, so don't play him. Same thing with Tim and Luis Robert. But otherwise, I want to see the players play out and have some pride. And yes, they won today, but it was just a lackluster effort again. I just think that Minnesota kind of gave them the game today.
Well, I want to talk about something real quick, and we do have a super chat. So hey, before Kevin. We get to the topic I want to talk about, let's talk about what Kevin wants to talk about. Thank you very much for the super chat, Kevin. Bram, 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 bram. Is that a Zach LaVine getting his hair cut? What's the profile pic? Both the Bulls and Sox had underwhelming off seasons after a first round exit. Is Jerry the common denominator? Also, should Robert be on the trade block? Herb, let's answer that first one. Is Jerry the common denominator on why the Bulls and Sox had underwhelming off seasons?
I don't know how much Jerry has his hand in the Bulls thing because he pretty much given all control to his son, Michael. So I can see where you can go there, but Jerry is the common denominator because he has ownership in both teams, but blame goes to one Frederick Hahn. That is the blame you need to have your ire focused towards because he got money. This is the seventh highest payroll at the opening day in Major League Baseball. And you saw what he did with the offseason that the White Sox had. Only got you relievers, got you Josh Harrison, and brought back Leury García. So that is where the blame goes. I don't too much blame Jerry Reinsdorf. He gave the money. They have a lot of money available to players. So I understand the whole blame Jerry thing, but time to take off the Teflon suit. Time to blame Rick Hahn for a couple things.
Yeah. Listening to the Bulls guys, it doesn't seem like they felt too underwhelmed by the offseason. I think it was just kind of the roster construction just restricted them. Like, you had to sign Zach LaVine. I know Steven disagrees with that.
Yeah,
but
you had to.
You had to. I mean, you're not just going to let him walk. Nope. And any other team would sign him to a max contract.
Correct.
And then if you were saying it's underwhelming because you didn't get Kevin Durant, well, no team got Kevin Durant. So every offseason would be underwhelming.
And they didn't have the necessary bullets to go and get Donovan Mitchell. They didn't have the necessary bullets to go and get Rudy Gobert. You didn't want to go and get Rudy Gobert for the price that Minnesota played for him. So I don't know what the Bulls could have done differently there. They could have signed every point guard ever like the Lakers did, but instead they just held pat, went and get Goran Dragic, who didn't get the memo, and now they have a pretty solid team. Without Lonzo Ball, they're pretty solid. With Lonzo Ball on the team, and they had some good news today. Check out our guys, CHGO Bulls, who are doing the post game right now. After our show, go ahead and check out theirs so you can find the Lonzo Ball good news out in their podcast. But they got some good news there. Io's growing, of course. He's the best player on the team.
ILL.
Is he not? INI. And so the Bulls, I think, are still, like, their fans are encouraged. Anybody in this chat encouraged that the White Sox this offseason are going to do anything next season? No. Because we know it's the same garbage going to be next year, too.
Well, and you assume, too, since they didn't make the playoffs, you won't have playoff money. So I doubt that budget that was seventh most in the major leagues would be seventh looking at 2023.
And they asked another question, too, right?
Well, I want to just wrap up on the Bulls-Sox thing real quick. I do want to talk to probably our Bulls guys just about this because I heard something, like, before Boylan's last year, like, Garpak's both checked out, and it was basically Jim Boylan running that show. Oof. And I think that was before Jerry's son, I'm blanking on the name, Michael took over. And I think maybe that's what's happening with the Sox. I don't know if Jerry and Kenny and Rick have checked out, but I don't know if Jerry's like fully on them. Like, here's your budget. I'm mad at the product, and like that's all you'll hear from me. But I don't know if there's too much middling, and I honestly don't know how much they care. If we're questioning how much the White Sox players care, I'm gonna question how much the White Sox front office cares. I know Rick Hahn was all fake mad after the trade deadline, but brother, you're the one controlling this. Like, you were fake mad in 2016 when you were mired in mediocrity and nothing's changed. You're 2-8. You have 2 winning seasons and 8 losing seasons, brother. Suck at your job.
Fake mad. That's the perfect way.
It's fake mad. And yep. That's what I'm going to say because, like, do we really think Rick Hahn's that pissed off? Like, I think Rick Hahn is probably confident in his own abilities as a GM. I don't think his confidence shaken is because he's had a job for 10 years and he's done nothing. Like, he has the best job security in the world. Like you said, the Teflon needs to be taken off him this year. And I think that, you know, that nickname is so generous to him, honestly. Like, it's a good nickname. Like, it's just a good rhyming nickname. But that's also, like,
courtesy of Beefloaf from the 108. But I initially called him Teflon Rick, and then Teflon Hon was right goddamn there, and I was like, oh, I'm so sad. Then I had been calling him that for years.
And then shout out to Beefloaf, but also hashtag fuck Beefloaf 2022. like, I don't know. It's just like, this guy doesn't deserve the protection that he has. And you're always questioning, like, what is the good thing that he's done? The signing Luis Robert and Eloy Jimenez to contracts before they started, no one else has done that. No one else is following suit. Project Birmingham, that's a little interesting because we haven't seen, you know, anybody put all of their baskets into, or all of their players into one minor league system like this before. But now the Cubs are kind of following suit because they've introduced a kind of a minor league camp at Wrigley Field where they've invited some players not to go to the fall league, but to get instructions here in Chicago, some kind of advanced practice and facility where they can work on those guys together in a bubble, kind of like what the Sox are doing. So I think it's interesting, at least some of the things that Sox are doing, but you can possibly make the argument that that's Chris Getz and not Rick Hahn. Like, I don't know what he's done well.
I don't know what Chris Getz does well. I don't know what anybody in the White Sox organization does well, except for Marco Patti. Marco Patti finds great international signings. He's good at his job.
Yeah.
Otherwise, it's real tough to see. And, of course, Ethan Katz is good at developing pitchers, getting pitchers back to their maximums. I mean, you could say Lucas Giolito isn't an example of that, but I'm sure this offseason with Ethan Katz, you'll see old Lucas Giolito come back. We saw little glimpses of it today, too.
Yeah, we'll talk about that right after we talk about the Robert stuff. Final thing I have to say, if you don't follow me on Twitter, it's called Being Bitter for a Reason. You bring up Marco Patti, and the guy is, you know, Rick Hahn is the contract guy. You know, one of the guys Marco liked? Juan Soto. You know how much the White Sox lost out on him? I think like 100K. So just real brutal. Chi-Town fanboy can't wait until Kenny Williams Jr. takes over as GM. I did have somebody was mentioning,
they,
like,
drafted him.
What's Kenny's timeline look like? And I think he said he wanted to retire when his contract was up, but we don't know when his contract's up. Final question, though, was Luis Robert and him getting traded. Since we have Vinny on the line, let's just roll Vinny into that because it's a super chat. So let's answer Kevin's question right after we tell you about PointsBet. PointsBet is the best way to bet live tonight on football. They're bringing you a better way to bet live on games, which means before this ad is over tonight, you could place a live same game parlay bet. You could bet on the next drive to be a touchdown and cash out your live second half over bet. I like the first half under bet. So if you're looking for something in the Miami-Cincinnati game tonight, I like under on the first half. With PointsBet, you have more access to live football markets than ever before. You could build the live perfect same game parlay by combining your favorite bets anytime during the game, including spreads, totals, player props, and more. I got a $2 free same game parlay from PointsBet because I signed in from 12 to 1 p.m. $2 same game parlay. Check out Chicago Bears after dark tonight starting at 6:30, where you can see what I'm putting together on that parlay. But hopefully you could win some money and you could choose the outcome of the next drive and points with PointsBet's lightning bet. So whether you're on the move or on the couch, do it live on PointsBet. Download the PointsBet app today and sign up with code CHGO to get two risk-free bets up to $2,000. And if you deposit $50 or more as a new customer using the code CHGO, you'll get two risk-free bets up to $2,000. You'll get a yearly CHGO membership. You'll also get access to our CHGO Discord. We call it the CHGO Lounge. And you'll get a free shirt from the CHGO Locker. Herb's got a CHGO shirt on. I have my new CHGO shirt on, so there's no better time to take advantage of the best deal in town. If you or somebody you know has a gambling problem and wants help, call 1-800-GAMBLER for crisis counseling and referral services. Now, let's tell you about game time. I want to go up to Marco, our guy, always commenting, always happy, always bringing some positive energy. Marcos Bueno says, Sean and Herb, finally, they won a game. On a positive note, if you want to call it that, I'll be at Petco Park tomorrow, courtesy of Game Time Tickets. Love watching your podcast. Cheers, fellas. And if you love CHGO, you're going to love Game Time. We were created for fans, and Game Time was created by fans for the fans. The hottest new ticketing site that makes it easier than ever to score the best deals on tickets to sports, concerts, and shows. If you ever dreamed of sitting in a seat you never thought you could, 50-yard line at the Bears game, maybe courtside at the Bulls game coming up, maybe behind home plate in the Sox Twin Series in the final home games, home series, floor seats at a concert. I got tickets to the Riviera on Monday, sitting up in the balcony. It was really nice to go to a concert with a chair. It's possible with the Game Time app to find these seats that you crave. The biggest last-minute price drops can be found on the seats you never thought you could buy, and you won't find a better deal this season on White Sox tickets, especially for those final three games against Minnesota at home. They guarantee the lowest price, and they have fantastic customer service that Herb can tell you about. He found he bought tickets to an Atlanta game, yep. Saw it was on a cheaper on a different site, told that to the Game Time people, and within like 30 minutes, he got credit in his Game Time. 12 minutes.
I literally counted it down. Like, I was surprised. I was expecting, you know, the regular runaround you get from these companies, like, blah, 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 this is not this, this is not that. No, they're like, cool, you did your work, here's your credit. I looked at the Game Time app, $46 in my Game Time account immediately, which I used later on for when we went to the White Sox game on that Tuesday. It was like the surprise game we went to. They lost to the Cleveland Guardians.
Right.
But it was still good. It was cheap tickets. I think I bought all the tickets with the $46 and then $2 extra left over for great seats.
There you go. So if you love CHGO, then you love Game Time. The best way to support us is by buying your tickets through the link in the description. Join over 15 million people, 15 million and one now, that Marcos bought his tickets, who have downloaded the Game Time app and score the best seats to all your favorite events.
And Petco, too. Mercy. I tell you what, nice. Marco, there's nothing better.
Hey.
I mean, there's two ballparks better, but you're going to enjoy yourself out there.
He's asking for some recs.
I mean, go to any place that sells tacos or burritos and ask them for a California burrito. Carne asada, fries, sour cream, cheese, everything. It's the biggest burrito you ever
bring
have.
Bring up Vinny. Vinny's got two thumbs up. No, hold him up, Vinny. Vinny's endorsing you right here.
Yes.
I love a California burrito.
And you're going back out there in December, right?
Well, no, I'll be a little further west in December. Outback. I'll be all the way west.
Be down under, mate. And eating some Vegemite, not California burritos. That's Vinny Duber, the voice of Vinny Duber. You can follow him on Twitter at Vinny Duber. He's also on our bubble here on our YouTube channel live. And you can chat with us if you want to check out the CHGO Sports YouTube channel. Vinny is the CHGO White Sox beat writer. Vinny, we had a super chat from our guy Kevin. We talked a little bit about the differences between the Sox and the Bulls, but also people are wondering about Luis Robert and if he should be traded. I just want to have this discussion with you three now. I would say no, mainly because you see what he was doing before the injury on August 12th, 790 OPS, 12 homers. Like, I think it was a down season, but we saw some really good stretches from Robert this year that I think were, you know, showing exactly what he did later in the last half of 2021, where he was phenomenal.
Yeah, I don't know if we ever really saw that Luis Robert, but I think the whole point is that we haven't, you know, that we didn't really see any Luis Robert just because of all the injuries. I mean, this is a guy who I think you can count four different times had his season interrupted by, you know, if not something severe, just something that really broke up any kind of flow that he had going. I mean, at first, early in the season, I think it was a groin injury, something in his leg that sidelined him for a little bit, for a few days. Then he comes back, starts getting good. And he told us all this the other day, by the way. You know, he ran us through this again. But then he has the COVID infection. And then he comes back, starts doing well from that. And then he gets hit with the whole dizziness and the blurred vision from the vitamin deficiency, comes back, and then you get the wrist thing. So, I mean, he's a guy who never was able to get in sync. And I think they kind of point to that as kind of, you know, a microcosm of what happened team-wide, that the team was never able to get in sync because it always was one injury or another. That's what they're talking about these last few days in Minnesota. But with Luis Robert specifically, that explanation applies to him very much, when it comes to describing his season. So I don't think anybody should be giving up on Luis Robert. If you're talking about trade value of these young core players, he's probably got the most of it just because he's still the guy with all that talent, with all those tools, and he's still the guy who is under contract for a long time, and has a lot of club control left. So, if you're sorting all these young core players by trade value, he might be at the top of that list, but it also goes both ways, right? It means he's a guy that you don't want to give up because you have invested in him and you've kind of planned out your team in a way around him, certainly around some other guys as well. But he's right at the top of that list of the guys that, you know, you want to have on your team if you're trying to win a World Series.
Definitely agree, Vinny. And I wanted to know, you know, Sean and I are pretty much done with the season. So when we see the victory, it's better than losing. So we're fine with it. How do the clubhouse take it? Because, you know, I hear that, you know, a win is a win in Major League Baseball. And so they probably have their hopes up and they're like happy that they didn't lose after an 8 in a row. How was the clubhouse today?
Oh, it was, there was noise in it. I think I've told you, you know, they play loud music after they win. They play nothing after you lose. And they've got the music blaring in there, and Lucas Giolito comes in to talk to us, and I go, how's it feel to finally have some music playing in there? And he went, and he's big smile on his face, and oh God, that's good. You know, it's just, it had been a while for these guys. You know, I think You know, I was kind of surprised to see that this was the first time Liam Hendricks even pitched since that Tuesday game against Cleveland. Jeez, just because not only have they not been in the safe situation, they haven't been winning. But, you know, usually to go that long for a closer especially, but the bullpen guy in general without pitching is nuts. And, you know, I think that kind of smacked me over the head a little bit about how long it had been. But then you go in there and you can see that there's smiles on these guys' faces and they're happy. Miguel Cairo was very happy to win. We walked in there and he's like, everybody smile. We finally got one of these. So, you know, they are playing for pride. They're playing to finish strong and they're playing to be above 500 by the end of the year, because as they keep saying, they think this team is an above 500 team. I mean, and you can argue that that's small potatoes compared to what they were supposed to do this year. And you'd be correct. But when that's all you got left to play for, you know, it's something. And it's I don't know if it's necessarily driving these guys right now or bringing them life that they didn't have throughout the whole season. It's something they want, because to be able to not finish even above 500 adds another rung to this disappointment ladder that they've gone ahead and constructed this year.
As our music guy, how's the quality of the music that they did play today?
Awful.
Is it EDM?
No, it's, I mean, listen, I should qualify that as saying awful by my level of taste, but let's put it this way. I heard a lot of the songs that they were playing at my middle and high school dances in there. So a lot of mid-2000s rap. So that was not necessarily my jam then, nor is it my jam now. So I'm sure there's plenty of people in the clubhouse who are happy about it, but when it comes to my taste, you know, a lot left to be desired.
Well, usually you are like, I have no clue what they're playing. So at least you could identify it today.
That's true. These were songs that I have heard before.
All right. Good to hear. This is around music here. What are you listening to on the way home? I mean, you better be putting some replacements on at least while you're still in the state of Minnesota.
Yeah, I guess so. I mean, I haven't really crafted it yet. I kind of freestyled on the way here, to be honest. You know, I knew I wanted to do the Minnesota artist, but so obviously plenty of Bob Dylan that I could throw on afterwards, and we'll see. We'll go from there. But also too, you know, I might just be feeling shuffle. You know what I mean? Okay. Might just be one of those where it's like, all right, we got 6.5 hours. Let's just play 6.5 hours and give me what you got, phone.
Well, here, all I'll say is Let It Be by the Replacements. I don't even think it's over. Yeah, it's a half hour. So, I mean, it knocks you down to 6 hours of shuffle. All right. So that's all I'll say. 33 minutes.
All right. I'll give it a go for you.
It's a quick one. And there's a couple skips in there, too. So, I mean, you could probably knock it down to 28 minutes. Let's real quick, too. I just want to note this. Emmanuel Classe in September has pitched in 16 games. This is Liam Hendricks' ninth. So it kind of just shows you how the Sox have fallen off really late here. Did you guys talk to Leury Garcia today? I did see Daryl ended up having some quotes. I wasn't sure if you were talking to Leury.
No, Daryl talked to him at some point this week, but that was not a group session, no.
Okay. Was there anyone today that really stuck out? Because, I mean, you talked to Luis yesterday. Was there anyone that really – were you able to talk to anyone pregame or postgame that, you know, stuck out?
Yeah, I mean, I talked to Josh Harrison today as the copy machine by me is going nuts here right now. But thank you to the Twins for letting me use this conference room, because the music was still blasting from the stadium in the place where I was the last two nights. But yeah, now we've got the nice hum of the copier. But yeah, I talked to Josh Harrison today, and he kind of described this season as, you know, he goes, I've been in this baseball for a long time. You know, he's played a lot of seasons, a dozen of them, I think. You know, he's been on all kinds of teams, and he said this was a weird one. I think everybody in this organization is pretty flummoxed by what happened this year. I don't think anybody can look at this with some certainty right now and say, you know, oh, it was because of this. We screwed this up. Let's fix that, and we'll be back to where we were. I think there's a lot of mystery, and maybe not mystery, but just confusion and you know, kind of looking up and not being able to believe that they're in the position that they're in, given the amount of talent on this roster. Given the amount of experience on this roster, certainly the amount of experience that the manager had and that the front office has had with these players. It's just crazy to think that this is where they're ending up, that there is a chance that they could be a sub 500 team as they are currently. You know, they'd have to win more than they lose over the next six here that they've got in order to finish the season above 500. And that's just crazy to say, given where this team was at the beginning of this year. And so Josh Harrison kind of echoed that. He told me that he signed a contract with a with a an option on it for next year. Obviously, it's the team's option, but with an option on it for next year for a reason. And he thought he was going to come here and be able to win. And I think that that feeling is still there in a way. So it was interesting stuff from him. Interesting stuff from the guys kind of all week. You know, talk to Dylan Cease, talk to Joe Kelly, talk to Andrew Vaughn, and it's really a lot of, you know, it didn't play well enough. I think, you know, I talk about kind of the mystery of why, perhaps, but I think everybody knows that this was not a season in which things went well. There were more downs than ups, as one of the guys said this week. So I don't think they know exactly why they couldn't get consistent. You know, they pointed to injuries, obviously, as we talked about yesterday, but this is the end of a very bizarre season, a weird one, as Josh Harrison called it. And I don't think it's going to get any less weird as time kind of separates them from the end of it.
Well, I just kind of want to follow up there because we've talked like about the injuries, and when we were talking about Luis Robert, you know, there was comments that were flashing the warning sign and be like, injury excuse, you know, there you go. It doesn't seem like the Sox are really leaning on injuries as an excuse. Like, there's definitely a reason why they didn't meet expectations, but it seems like mostly what you're saying is the guys are like, well, we just didn't play well enough. Like, injuries were a thing, but we still needed to play better.
Well, yeah, I mean, I even asked Lucas Giolito at postgame today. I go, you know, can you talk about what went wrong for you guys, basically? And he said, well, yeah, I mean, I'll start with the injuries, but also there's a lot of reasons why things went wrong, why things didn't go right. Every time people, I'm guessing fans, hear, you know, them blame the injuries for something, they roll their eyes and go, oh, of course, they're going to say that. Oh, that's such a cop-out kind of thing. And I think I'll bring up again what I guess is a catchphrase of mine at this point. Multiple things can be true. They could have played really bad all year, and the injuries are not the only reason they lost. But guess what? They were injured a lot. That's just true. And if you talk about getting consistency from your play, whether it be at the plate, whether it be at the mound, in the field, on the bases, whatever, and, you know, this team struggled to get consistency in any aspect all year long, they couldn't get consistency in health. And they couldn't trot a lineup out there that could grow together and figure out how to play. Now, granted, you could say that they should know that already, obviously, but injuries are a valid excuse or a valid reason for why things didn't go well. They are far from the only reason things did not go well, and I think that the players know that, and that's what is being reflected in their answers to these questions over the last few days.
How's Lucas feeling? It looked like he was struggling like he does usually in that first inning. Then he settled down and got the job done with five innings pitched and six strikeouts, only three walks today.
Yeah, I mean, it's becoming a little bit of a theme here. We had the same situation the last time he pitched at home, and then again today where things started real bad and it was not going well. And then he made an adjustment and it worked. And I think that happened again today, whereas he was kind of searching all over, looking, trying to do something in the first inning there. It wasn't working. He almost threw 30 pitches. And then at some point, it just clicked for him. Now, the whole point is that he's got to stop getting it to click after he gives up two runs, you know, in the first inning. And basically, I asked him kind of, you know, how do you see your season? What went wrong with your season here kind of thing? And he pointed out a big thing was in the middle of the year, rather than kind of making those little adjustments in the moment, which have helped him succeed here in the last couple of outings, the last few outings, he tried to change everything. He tried to overhaul everything in the middle of the year, and it was too much. And it was that whole trying to do too much, which we heard as an explanation for why a lot of the guys were struggling on offense. But, you know, we heard that from Tony plenty of times throughout the year. And I think Lucas was trying to do it within his own bubble of trying to fix his own season. So, you know, you can't hit a five-run homer. You can't go out and throw a perfect game with one pitch. And I think Lucas was trying to do that throughout the middle of the season. Now that it's gotten down to the end here, I think he's kind of figured out how to go about things, how to attack things a little more in the moment. And it's worked for him the last little bit. But he's obviously got to figure something out this offseason, because to end the season, obviously he's got one more start left, but to end a season with a 5 ERA with the kind of pitcher that we know that he's capable of being is just not going to cut it, especially for a team that's trying to win the World Series.
I think last time we talked after a Lucas start, you mentioned he was working on mechanics and you talked about those tweaks there. Did he talk about anything, especially with his fastball? Because it does seem like he's losing a lot of velocity and life on it. I know he's trying to work through some stuff. I'm not sure if he mentioned anything about that today and what he might have found.
I don't think so specifically today. Just in general, he's said, you know, after starts that he's been struggling to find his stuff all year long. And I think that it's kind of going to take him some time to, you know, once he gets an entire offseason going where he doesn't have to worry about pitching every fourth day, you know, where he doesn't need to worry about it being perfect every fourth day, and he can go 15, 20, 30 days in a row of just trying to figure it out without having to worry about a guy hitting a home run off of you or a guy going to first base on a walk. You would think that it would be able to be a little easier for him to do that. So he's got Ethan Katz. He's got the guy that fixed him the first time. You would like to think that those conditions would be helpful for him. It's going to be a very important offseason for Lucas Giolito. It's going to be a very important offseason for the White Sox in general. But this is a guy who, going into 2021, a lot of people might have been able to argue that he was the ace of the staff, depending on what your definition of that word is. I think I would have been among them. And I think he's going to go into 2023. If you were to go ahead and rank, you know, the pitchers in order of their effectiveness, no higher than fourth, right? So this is a guy who can be a one, because we've seen him do it before. He's got to find his way back to it, because the only way you win the World Series is by having a lot of guys who are capable of that kind of performance on a regular basis. I looked at the Sox starters ERA today on the season, right there at 16, right in the middle, right? And they got to get it lower. It's not that they've been bad. I think the starting pitching has been among the finer elements of this team throughout the year. But if they're going to be a championship caliber pitching staff, they got to have 3-4 guys who can go out there and deliver every day. Lucas has been far from that this season.
And this is not necessarily for today's game, but Lucas did struggle in the first inning. And we've seen multiple pitchers do this consistently. Like Michael Kopech had a lot of troubles getting out the first inning without throwing 25 pitches or more. Is there anything organizationally or Ethan Katz can fix, or they can do something experimental to have these first innings not be as so tiresome for these pitchers? Because through these first inning pitches of 25 or more, they can't finish the game. You know, Lucas only went 5 today. Michael Kopech mostly would only go 5 or 6. Is there anything that they've spoke out about that in particular struggles in the first inning?
I did ask Lucas about it, so I mean, I can talk on just him from a him standpoint. I asked him about it today, and he said basically it's about getting that pregame work to go a little smoother. That you got to be in a bit more of a rhythm, in a bit more comfort zone before the game even starts. Because it seems like maybe kind of the trying to find your comfort or rhythm within a start is carrying into the first inning. And when you're out there searching and you're not, you know, dominating guys from the get-go, you're going to get results like you got today and like he got from much of his season. So for him, it's about the bullpen sessions and the warm-ups that go into getting ready for a start. It's about making those go a little bit smoother for him, so he's able to carry it into the game rather than carry I don't want to say lack of preparation, but a lack of comfort into the game where he's still finding his footing after, you know, the first pitch has been thrown. And by then it's kind of a little too late.
You got any more baseball thoughts?
I have no more.
All right, Vinny, I got some donut questions. How was the blueberry donut this morning?
Dude,
9:18 a.m. we get the tweet.
I love a blueberry donut. I love a blueberry donut. I might have mentioned on here, I'm not a healthy eater. Mm-hmm. Fruits and vegetables, not really my thing.
Blueberries are fruit.
32 years of my life. But I have recently dipped my toes in the water of the blueberry donut, and man, it is fantastic. I've had this one now twice. This one up here in Minnesota, and then over the summer I had an exceptional one in Michigan as well. So blueberry donut is kind of my current flavor of my the hot flavor right now for me.
Was it an old fashioned or was it glazed? I really couldn't tell.
Cake. Cake is is a little glazed, but yeah, cake donut. Just your regular business there.
I respect the choice. I love it. I love to see you rocking blueberry.
And blueberries are fruit, so you're eating healthy there.
There you go.
Exactly. I was just setting up the fact that it's not something that I've been eating for years and years. It's a new thing for me.
Delicious. Yeah, way to venture out. All right. I want to have this discussion with you, and then we'll let you go, and then you can start your 6.5-hour drive. Hope it's a safe one. And hope you enjoy the Replacements' Let It Be album. But let's go to Minnesota. These might be the last time we see some of these jerseys for the Twins, because in 2023, the president said that new logos and uniforms are coming in 2023 and that they'll, quote...
Oh, the Twins president. I thought you meant Joe Biden announced the uniform change for the Twins.
Minnesota! Get new uniforms!
That they'll take a new step towards the future. And let's... I think we have the shot of all six current Twins uniforms. What are our thoughts here, Vinny? We could start with you on where the Twins should go uniform wise. Did they have anything that's worked? I know some people like the old pinstripes of back in the day. What are your thoughts on how Minnesota can kind of pick a direction here? Because they got five different uniforms to pick from.
Yeah, I mean, I don't hate the Twins uniforms. I think being around the ballpark today, you see a lot of pictures of their like 60s and 70s uniforms, which are what, if you look, the one you just had up there, the blues, the baby blues. Mm-hmm. The script is a little different, and the script looks like the old 50s, 60s, 70s ones. I don't know if they were here in the 50s, let's say 60s and 70s. That script looks good to me. And I like a cream for the Twins. I think a cream would be good as maybe their home jerseys, and the baby blues are great. I don't need much red. I don't need a ton of red from the Twins. That's just me. You know,
I agree.
They're blue first for me. I don't know how much navy I need either, to be quite honest. But the cream would look good. I think the baby blues look good. Go with the old school script rather than the new school script. And the TC hat's kind of classic, I think. So I don't think they need a big change. To be honest, but it sounds like they're going to get one. I don't like the pinstripes on the Twins. I don't know why. I feel like pinstripes need to be limited to the number of teams that have them needs to be shaved down. It's overplayed, I think. You know, like, why do the Rockies have pinstripes?
Yeah.
Rockies don't need pinstripes. They need to lean into the purple. They need more purple. But yeah, no, the Twins got a great thing going here, I think. Their stadium's awesome. That Minnie and Paul logo is just phenomenal. That's the handshake logo is like one of my favorite baseball logos ever. So they need to keep that around for sure.
Yeah, I'm glad they made a big ass neon sign of it.
What do you think? It's awesome. There? Combines two of my favorite things, the Minnie and Paul logo and just neon in general.
Agreed.
Well, I don't like the Twins, so I don't care which jerseys they go with. But the baby blues.
It's a cop out. It's a cop out answer.
On most teams look great. If you go baby blue, especially how you should go baby blue all the way through, like the old school Royals. And I think the Twins do it from time to time with the little red accents on a blue lettering. I'm fine with that. And as Vinny says, that logo with the two guys shaking hands, the Twins shaking hands with the state of Minnesota behind it, they should have that on the hat as the logo.
That's hard. There's too much going on for it to be on the hat, I think.
Like, just have the state of Minnesota and on the side have the two guys, like, shaking hands.
The TC's really clean. I think it's easy for them. Where were the Lakers, guys? Where were the Lakers from, guys?
Minneapolis.
Minnesota. All right, let's just take that powder blue and just change out that navy. I think I'm with you. I think that navy's holding them back. If they want to be that team that really wants to lean into the powder blue uniforms, like the 70 powder blue uniforms, I think they should do it because Texas is kind of doing it. Be the team that's like, you know, these are our main uniforms. I agree that I kind of like the creams, but get rid of those reds. Get rid of just the whites. Get rid of the navy jerseys. Just make it a powder blue home jersey or a powder blue alternate that you wear on the road.
Powder blue should be their regular road jerseys with the powder blue pants. Cream at home. Boom, done. You don't need an alternate. Done.
With the powder blue pinstripes. Cream and powder blue pinstripes. How about that?
No pinstripes.
All right. I was just joking.
Not even the Kirby Puckett Road Minnesota Twins pinstripes?
Minnesota.
No. I'm anti-pinstripes for the most part. I think the Yankees are fine with the pinstripes. The Cubs are okay with the pinstripes. Other than that, we don't need many pinstripes. I know the Sox home jerseys have pinstripes. Take or leave them.
The Southside City Connects have pinstripes too.
Yeah, not my thing either. I don't need pinstripes.
I'm a fan of the black jerseys, the black alternates for the Sox, and the sleeveless ones. That's what I want for the Sox if we're making any jersey changes. Anyways.
If they were to bring back the red pinstripes, I'd be in support of that, though. I love them 70s oh, the red Dick pinstripes. Allens.
The Bill Melton.
The red ones.
The Belton Bill Meltons.
I like the royal blue ones, too. In 69, they had royal blue White Sox uniforms, and I like those. Good. I'm a fan of those. But anyways, Vinny, have a very, very safe drive back home to the motherland, and enjoy that replacements record, and maybe pick up another, the motherland of Africa, and maybe pick up another dozen of donuts.
I was going to say, if you're talking about my motherland, I can't drive to Sweden, man. That's I need an ice bridge if that's going to work, and it's a little too early in the season for that.
There you go. All right. Maybe we'll take a Swedish pilgrimage, me and you, with the Anderson last name and the Dubers. But anyways, have a safe trip, 6.5-hour trip, and enjoy the replacements. We'll talk to you later. Follow Vinny on Twitter at Vinny Duber. He's our CHGO White Sox beat writer.
I mean, going through Wisconsin, you can play the Bodines, some Bon Iver.
Ooh, I like Bon Iver. Like that might make Vinny cry. You're playing Bon Iver. I mean, that's a nighttime drive. That's some sad boy shit.
Oh, fiance loves it. Those Bon Iver.
Courtney's a sad boy, I guess.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, what I know is up in Wisconsin is a bunch of golf courses that Illinoisans love to go to. And if you are a golfer, Pins and Aces is the official golf apparel partner of Chicago, or of CHGO, for a reason. They're the presenting sponsor of Big Drive Energy out in DNVR. And that's how we were introduced to them. And now they're just supporting all City Network. And we're very, very happy to have them on board. We love our Pins and Aces gear, whether we're wearing it in Wisconsin or whether we're wearing it on the links here in Illinois. And we get tons of compliments whether we're up north by those hosers in Wisconsin or here in Illinois, the motherland.
Cake eaters up in Minnesota,
as I called it. Those Packers and off the course too. So you know, when I'm on the course, you know, hitting drives and all that stuff, I'm getting compliments. When I'm off the course, also getting compliments. When I'm in the parking lot putting my clubs away, I'm getting compliments. They're a family-owned golf and apparel business, and they make amazing polos, hats, golf bags, and even our favorite beer sleeve. If you want to become someone's best friend, bust out the beer sleeve on a golf course. It's an innovative product that allows you to store 7 beers right inside your golf bag, and it keeps drinks cold the entire round. So for a Chicagoan, probably are drinking. You could probably use this even when you're not on the course. This is probably a 365 day thing for you. I already see Sean Furlow in there talking about a bunch of beer. A guy, Dan Reyes, just celebrated his 34th birthday, and I saw him drinking Corona with a shot. I mean, come on. You could sell a beer sleeve to Chicagoans. So check out pinsandaces.com and use code CHGO to receive 15% off your first order and get free shipping. Maybe your dad's got a birthday. Get him a beer sleeve. Go to pinsandaces.com and again, use code CHGO for 15% off your first order and get free shipping. Our guy Shane Newbank's coming in saying, Cubs win. Congrats. The Sox also won, so y'all can't have the same record as us. Luke Stuckmeyer is trying to tease me, trying to poke the bear, saying the Cubs and Sox would have the same record. No, the White Sox will at least have one more win than the Cubs. So screw you, Shane. Screw you, Luke. Screw you, Cody, Corey. I haven't even met Brendan. Screw him. Screw Ryan Herrera in Missouri. Did you see that bad beat on Saturday of Missouri? I had Missouri on the money line at +220. And I am blaming Ryan Herrera for that one. They had so many chances to put Auburn away.
Make the field goal.
Miss a field goal. The guy's not even warming up on the sidelines. Miss a field goal. Drop an interception. They were offsides on a missed field goal. Then they nail that field goal, go up 3. And then the guy has a wide open lane to the end zone. He fumbles the ball on the one. Mm-hmm. Like, screw Mizzou. Screw Ryan Herrera.
I agree.
I love agree. You too, Shane, but get out of here. Get out of here. We don't need this. We don't need that. Congrats on the Cubs win.
The Sox are
kicking up their feet. I don't have to worry about the Sox and Cubs having the same record, baby. I'm all good. I'm in happy land.
I mean, my guy just sent me a tweet, and I don't know if it's actually true. For the first time in the 139 years that they've played each other, Phillies and Cubs, there's been a season sweep.
Really?
Yeah, 6-0.
Damn.
The Cubs have swept the Phillies both in Philadelphia, here in Chicago. And the Philadelphia Phillies are playing for something right now. Yeah. Phillies and the Brewers are tied for that last wild card spot in the National League.
So Cubs helping out the Brewers here.
Yep.
And
enjoy that, Shane. When the Brewers are in the playoffs, You made it happen. Well, you Cub fans made that happen.
And I get why Shane's talking trash, because DR says embarrassing that the Sox and Cubs record are this close, which they is are. Absolutely true. I want to go up in the comments. I think it was by Carlos, and he mentioned why you guys keep bringing up that the Sox have the seventh highest payroll in baseball. It doesn't matter. It does matter, Carlos, and I do appreciate your comments. He had two comments, if you wouldn't mind just searching Carlos' name, but he said, please stop bringing up the seventh highest payroll crap. He should have spent more, and it's about how you spend it. None of those big signings worked at all. I'm bringing up seventh highest because it's notable. The White Sox had the seventh highest payroll in baseball. The White Sox shouldn't be as bad as the Cubs are. They shouldn't be below 500. The fact that they have the seventh highest payroll, I'm bringing it up to shame them, Carlos. I'm bringing it up to rub them in their faces. This team should not be where they're at. The fact that they have the seventh highest payroll in baseball and have this record is mired in mediocrity. It's the same crap he was talking about in 2016. And let's look at Rick Hahn's money and all the money that he's been able to spent. This is the highest payroll he's ever had. And what does he have to show for it? Another losing season. It matters that it's the seventh highest payroll, because it won't be the seventh highest payroll next year because they didn't make the fucking playoffs. And the fans are going to suffer. In 2012, he had the 11th highest payroll. In 2013, he had the 9th. In 2014, he had the 20th. In 2015, he had the 15th. 2016, he had the 16th highest. 2017, 15th. 2018, last payroll in baseball, 29th, 26th payroll in baseball, 2020, the 17th payroll in baseball, and 2021, the 15th payroll in baseball. They have been top 10 twice in Rick Hahn's GM reign here, and they've only been over $200 million once. It was this year, and they didn't do shit with it.
And the reason why I bring up the seventh highest payroll is because people always go back to the, Jerry doesn't give him money. Jerry, it's Jerry's fault. He's cheap. No, he gave him money. Rick just had a poor job of spending this money and identifying what the White Sox have needed for years. A right fielder. They have needed a right fielder for a long time. He's tried to go and get you Nomar Mazzara, who sucks. He's tried to go and bring back that garbage Adam Eaton. Sucked. Right when it happened, I said, Adam Eaton's trash. Do not bring him back. Somebody, oh, he won a World Series with the Washington Nationals. He sucks. And this is Rick Hahn. This is what Rick Hahn does. He keeps on sucking and keeps on keeping his job. And then people make excuses for him and say, Jerry's cheap. Jerry hired Tony. No, let's stop it. This is Rick's fault. This is the problem. Like people always say, man, Rick built this off this nice roster up. Man, it's awesome roster. Good job, Rick. And then when it comes to actually evaluating, oh, they were too hurt. Oh, no, Jerry was doing this. Oh, no, Tony was doing that. Can we just look at the guy who put the roster together and give him some blame every once in a while instead of just like hemming and hawing about everything else? No, this is on Rick Hahn. The most, if I get a pie chart, Rick Hahn gets the most blame. Maybe not all of it. He gets the most blame out of all this. More than Jerry, more than everybody else. It's Rick Hahn's fault.
I don't know if I...
Yeah. Who's gets but more Jerry, than Rick Hahn?
But Jerry's been here for 40 years. So I just think that maybe he deserves more blame because of the culture that he set, and the fact that Tony La Russa was allowed back into this organization, I think is just such a demeaning thing. And yes, they won 93 games last year. And Carlos is saying, I'm talking about spending the money the correct way. It's no way we shouldn't have Harper and Machado. Richard and Jerry are to blame too. Yes, Rick Hahn and Jerry are to blame. But here's the thing. White Sox fans get so annoyed at having a seat at the table. You don't have a seat at the table if you don't have money. You can't just go and offer Manny Machado $275 million in a crap option, right? If you don't have that money. Jerry was willing to spend it in some way. Rick Hahn needs to be a better seller. He needs to say, we need this guy. This is how this guy is going to change his team. He is not a good salesperson. He can't sell to other teams. You could see the trade deadline this year. He's not been able to go get that big free agent, even though they made a play for Bryce Harper and they made a play for Manny Machado. They made a play for Zach Wheeler and couldn't get him too. Rick Hahn can't sell Chicago to free agents. It's this guy's fault. So again, the money's not being spent the correct way because the guy in the position of spending the money is doing a shit job at sending it. And you're asking, like, what should we look for in 2023? It's how did they get themselves out of it? Like, there's not much to sell you on. There's not a lot of hope that I can sell you on. What I'm telling the White Sox should do, or what I think the White Sox should do, is get rid of their MVP, their 2022 or their 2020 MVP, the guy who's going to have 79 retired, have a whole big ceremony, deserves to have so many standing ovations in Chicago for what he's done as a White Sox. I think the White Sox need to get away from that player, because they don't understand how to win. And I think that getting away from Jose Abreu could possibly create a new culture where Aloy needs to step up, Andrew Vaughn needs to step up, McCanna needs to step up, Robert needs to step up, because the guy that always steps up, the guy that's always showing up, the guy that's always answering the bell is gone.
Yep.
I don't know how they get out of this. And I won't have optimism about this team until they start winning games. Like, I won't have optimism about this team until like June of 2023. If they're like, you know, 5 games above .500. I'll start having optimism then. But until we start seeing changes, I'm not going to sell you on an optimistic 2023.
I mean, we've already said that what Rick Hahn, when he has his end of the season press conference, he will bring up the injuries. He will bring up career lows in hitting. He'll bring up the lack of home runs. He'll bring up everything that isn't germane to him. He'll be looking at other people like, man, the team sucked. Tony sucked. Everything else sucked. But we believe that bringing back all this suck and next year, going to next year, somehow magically we'll get better. Yay! An off season. Yay! We're going to just get better because they're better than that? I don't know. Like, I don't know why he can't look in the mirror. Rick Hahn probably don't have any mirrors at this house and see what the real problem is. It's him and how he does his job. As I said yesterday, if I was Rick Hahn or Kenny Williams with the job security I got, man, I'll be doing some wild-ass shit. Wild shit where I'm trying different things because I know that Jerry is the owner that he is. And if he's going to usurp my authority in hiring the manager, I'm going to do some wild stuff so I can proof this roster from Tony La Russa so I can make sure that everything is on the up and up and get some more depth on this team. He knew he needed depth. He knew that... that Aloy is off the injured. He knew that Luis Robert's off the injured, so you need more depth on the team, and he did not get that. He did not get help at the All-Star break where we needed it, and Jake Diekman is nothing, and now he's coming back this year. He signed the White Sox to a bunch of bad deals now that they're stuck with. It's really bad. I wish he was hired.
Yes, and I do want to go to a super chat. We got one from our guy, Stefan Bardo, saying Mark Payton only making $700,000, and that's the reason why Engel won't be back. Yeah, I don't think they're going to tender Engel at all. I don't know if Peyton's going to be that replacement, but I mean, seeing that you can get something, I mean, Adam Engel's just been so horrible. I mean, it doesn't even matter how good Mark Payton's been. I think just Adam Engel's going to get non-tendered anyways, but we do want to give a shout out to Mark Payton. Got his first career RBI in the league on his hometown team, St. Rita alum. You guys, Southside Zoe's got to be real
happy.
That's
what St. Rita people do. They don't win football games when it's necessary against the Wheaton North Falcons. They get smoked in the championship games, but they can hit a baseball. And they can have an RBI. Sorry, Southside Zoe.
There you go.
I had to bring that up. And by the way, they're ranked higher than the Wheaton North Falcon in the 7A standings. Come on now. They lost 2 games. I know they lost the 2 games to Mount Carmel and Loyola. But damn it, we lost the 1 game to St. Charles North. I know I'm mad about high school sports and I'm a 43-year-old man. I know it's pathetic. Shut up, guys. Shut up.
All right. Steven, what else we got? I think we just got the Giolito stuff. Is that it? All right, let's go to the Giolito stuff. Shout out to Mark Payton, though, for the first career RBI. Sox win 4-3, so it was an important one. This is Lucas Giolito's line, 5 innings pitched, 2 earned runs, 4 hits, 3 walks, 6 Ks. I don't care too much about Louis Varland, so I'm not even going to read his stats. Let's look at Lucas's pitch mix today. 47 fastballs thrown, 27 changeups, 17 sliders, 2 curveballs, called strike plus whiff percentage of 28%. League average is 27, so he's an average pitcher today. Nice to see 14 called strikes. The main thing that people are going to be looking at, though, is that pitch velocity. The four-seam fastball was about was down about 2 miles per hour on average to his yearly average. So it was sitting on about 90.8. The yearly average is 92.7. So he was down today. I think he had 4 fastballs that were 92 plus and 12 that were below 90. Changeup was down about 2.6 miles per hour. We did see some interesting changeups. Seems like he might have tweaked it a little bit. It seemed like he had two changeups, one that was more straight down and one that faded away to righties. So that might be interesting to see if Lucas has another start. And then the curveball was also down 3 miles per hour, but only threw two of those. But I want to go to the adjustments that he made, because you ended up bringing this up. We brought this up with Vinny. You know, what changed for Lucas Giolito? I think it was mainly he went away from that changeup, and as much as he threw it, he threw 8 changeups in the first inning, and it seemed like that was really what hitters were locking in against Giolito. And you could see against right-handers, he threw 7 changeups versus right-handers in the first inning, then only 1, 1, 2, and 4. So he really started to lower that usage and became more of a slider fastball pitcher against right-handers. And I think that was the main thing, was the Twins forced him to use his 2 worst pitches. They know the changeup was the best pitch that he has, so he turned him into a slider and fastball pitcher. And honestly, the second through the fifth innings, Giolito looked fine. So I got to give him credit for this. The changeup looks good. The changeup stats are fantastic. 37% called strike plus whiffs. Got 5 whiffs on 16 changes, 5 called strikes as well. That's a great pitch, and the fact that he was still able to do positive damage with his fastball and slider with the velocity where it's at, it gives me a little hope. I really do think he's still being affected by the weight that he put on this offseason, and I don't think he ever came over that abdominal injury. Hopefully, during the offseason, he'll be able to rest up, heal that muscle properly, and he'll be able to come back for the Sox. And I'm not expecting Lucas the ace back, but I think that there is still at least a competent starting pitcher there, where if you're looking for a fifth starter or a fourth starter, I think I'd be fine having Lucas Giolito be that pitcher, at least for the first 2 months of next year.
Yeah, he's in his prime, so I don't think that this is going to be Lucas Giolito where he's a low 90s, 89-mile-per-hour fastball anymore, where he was started his career in the high 90s. Just lost a lot of velocity this year, and like you said, a lot of things. The abdominal injury, the COVID he went out with earlier. I don't know the effects of COVID with a pitcher, you know, with the stamina, how far you can pitch and how well you can pitch. So blank slate, go away, have a good offseason, heal up 100%, and then have a good offseason. And I think he can get back to a level, because we saw this before, where 2018 was the worst pitcher in baseball. He worked with Ethan Katz and came back in 2019. He was much better. Now, some would say he had better stuff then, and yes, he did, but that changeup wasn't developed as it is now. I think his changeup, as you said, is the best pitch, and it's been looking really crisp his last couple starts. But today, they were just keying in, and they brought it up in the broadcast that it reminded him of that Boston series, that Boston game where they had Lucas Giolito giving up 7 runs early versus the Boston Red Sox last year. And he pretty much had to shelf that changeup for the rest of the year, or not shelf it, but go more slider. Today, he learned his lesson. He saw that they're keying on the changeup, and he adjusted. That's good. Good in-game adjustments to what the hitters are doing and what the scouting report you could see in that first inning, what they were looking on and what they're keying on. And so they did what they had to do, and Lucas had to adjust back to him. He is a pitcher that can do that. We've seen that time and time again in this year, where he gets hit hard early, especially home runs, and then adjusts, and from second on to the sixth, he was good. In the middle of the season, he was just horrendous, just one of the worst pitchers in baseball. Now it seems like he's working his way back to being at least acceptable. 5 innings is not what you want, but for Lucas Giolito, we'll take anything positive right now going into this last game of this last start of the season, which will be next year or next week versus these Minnesota Twins.
Well, and we hear what Luis Robert, when he's playing through injuries, and what Vinny just recently wrote about on allchgo.com, and you can read that if you remember, that how he wanted to play through that injury, how he got those 8 days off and still wanted to fight through it. But what he was realizing was, you know, he wasn't able to use his hand in the same way. And I wonder if Giolito, Vinny was talking about those mechanics and those changes that he was trying to do, and he wasn't doing it really, you know, game after game and try to do it all at once and overhaul his mechanics. I do wonder then, if this abdominal heals and he's able to throw back to his other way, is he then going to have to readjust his mechanics as well?
Yeah.
And I think one thing that I haven't really seen from Lucas this year is that drive, and not like the mentality of drive, but like the physical drive of pitching. What was really, you know, noticeable about Giolito, he had a really unique delivery in the way that he finished. I don't think he's finishing the same way, and I think it's just because that abdominal's hurt, he's not able to pull down as much. That's why that velocity's down. I really do think it's an injury issue with him that hopefully he'll be able to heal up with. Katz is able to work on those mechanics and get him back to where he was. But we even see Spencer Strider. Like, Spencer Strider in college threw about, like, 95. And then he got more depth. He got more, you know, he was able to get more drive on that his lower half, and he was able to get up to, like, 102. I think just Lucas needs more drive in those lower half, and I think it's probably difficult. You see Spencer Strider, he's a smaller frame guy. Lucas being that big, I think it's just really difficult for him to work on it. So hopefully he puts in that work in the offseason. He's able to get healthier, and I think that we'll be able to bounce back. Jim Margulis used to talk about Rodon grunting through with the fastball. Maybe Giolito needs to trust that more. Yeah, I think it's just more of, you know, you got to throw it with emphasis. You got to throw it with conviction, and I think right now he's throwing it with command and not conviction, and I think he's got to figure out how to mix those two.
I mean, we saw when Liam Hendricks first got here, he said he would rather throw a bad pitch with actual confidence than a good pitch without confidence. Yeah. Because of how you feel about that pitch kind of dictates to the batter how he will react to it. So if you feel like you're a badass and you know that these people can't hit you, even though it's middle fastball, 99 miles per hour, you want to challenge them. That sometimes scares hitters. It's like, oh man, you... What? Word? Okay, cool. But if you throw the filthiest pitch ever and people spit on it, it's like, hey, and you had no confidence in that pitch. Right. Sometimes you see a non-competitive pitch from time to time and somebody brings up the Sieg's weaknesses, he loses command. Less and less this year have you seen Dylan Cease throw non-competitive pitches. Last year was like the thing
right.
he used to do. And early in this year, he was the thing. And that's why he's developed himself into a Cy Young contender. Lucas Giolito needs to have a little bit more confidence, and maybe the injury, the not finishing correctly, losing velocity on the fastball, all these things make you lose confidence in what you're doing. And seeing the ball get hit really goddamn hard makes you lose a little confidence in what you're doing. And so you're pitching kind of like kicking rocks around there. People are going to pick up on that, and they're going to crush you.
Yeah, and to Cease last year, early on in the season, it was difficult for him to even throw first pitch strikes. Mm-hmm. And I think that's something that clearly he's changed. But I think in the first five starts of 2021, he had about, I would say, a first pitch strike of 31%. Now it's around 58%. So what Lucas has just been able, or what Dylan's been able to do, is just find that mechanics. If he has an off pitch, he's able to correct it within. He's able to stay focus, compose, and that's the biggest thing with Cease, is that confidence is there, but he also has that composure. And that's why I think, you know, when he's walking off the mound and he realized he had a big moment or a big inning, he's not overwhelmed and still in his head walking to the dugout. He's able to take it in, take in that crowd and that energy, and just be like, all right, I did my job, let's go. And we even see Hendricks. You talk about like throwing bad pitches, but with confidence. I mean, you were talking about how he's going to blow it today. Yeah. But one, I think the second guy struck out, it was 1-2 pitch, 99 over the middle of the plate, but it was outside. And like, I think it was just, you know, guys, when you're going up against them, it's probably like, oh, am I looking slider away? Am I looking fastball up and in? Oh, it's down the middle, shit. And it's just like, you threw that with confidence. The guy was just like not confident up there. And that's all it is you just need to throw it with conviction. And I don't know if Giolito has been doing that this year. Final thing before we wrap this up, I told Herb it would be a 45-minute podcast. We're already at an hour.
We always say that.
We got one more thing. Let's go to today's Socksmith video. We got to give a huge shout-out to our guy, Sean Janko. You can follow Sean Janko on Twitter, @Sean_W. Started to do my own damn tag. You can follow Sean on Twitter, @Sean_Janko, J-N-K-O. His dad usually hangs out in this chat as well, and Sean does as well. They're great Sox fans, and you can tell he's a great Sox fan because look at the shirt he's wearing.
Thanks, Jason and Steve, for another great season, even though it wasn't the outcome we wanted. As now a two-time winner of Socksmath, I humbly request the return of the prize shelf back in 2023. Back to you, Jason and Steve, for today's Socksmath question.
Congrats to Sean Janko, shirt choice of the year. Wore a CHGO shirt and a Socksmath shirt, but now the fact that, you know, it's a non-employee wearing it, I think it's a tip of the cap to Sean Janko. Great job. And Jason Steve said they're bringing back the prize closet. So he's just getting wins for Sox fans today.
He's using his profile and his progress on Socksmath, like you did, to both have us get a little shine and also bring back something for everyone. You could have had 4 bobbleheads by now if they had the prize shelf. Could have had a signed picture of Barbara Eden by now.
Ooh, I want the Stoney Mintz one. I mean, I really do. If I had an Altoid Mintz box signed by Stoney, I think that would make my year. That's the prize I want. But shout out to Sean Janko for wearing the shirt and representing Sox fans well. And after every Sox game, he has the 3 positives for White Sox. So even in a bad season, Sean Janko is always bringing positivity for your Sox. So he's a great follow. Make sure you follow him on Twitter at Sean underscore Janko.
Exactly. And he's a good guy. Good cat. Yeah. One of the best.
One of those nice Iowans.
An Iowan cat.
Yeah.
Probably likes those Hawkeyes.
No, he's a Cycloner.
I mean, don't hold that against him either.
I'm just going to bet against Iowa State. That's
foolhardy.
His fault. I just like the Jayhawks. I will be winning money on Saturday, and you won't be.
Kansas football.
Kansas money line, baby. Plus 125. They're 4-0. They should be ranked.
Watch when we come back here on Sunday. Yeah. Sean's going to be broke. Hawkeye's going to be all out.
Oh, man. That's going to be the Padres. That's going to be Padres series. I'm excited. What are you expecting here? I mean,
I'm expecting the Padres to celebrate in front of the White Sox. At least win these two out of three games. They're going to celebrate their wild card berth, and I'm going to enjoy it. It's going to be great no matter what. If the White Sox win, I'm going to be less happy. And then the Padres are going to be very happy. It's going to be great that they're going to the playoffs.
I'm happy that you
got it. Like, if it was a thing where both teams needed it, of course, I'm cheering for the White Sox. But the White Sox don't need it anymore. The Padres do. So I'm going to be Padre-ing up. I'm going to be brown and yellow, brown and yellow, brown and yellow.
I hope that you get that win and your one of your teams makes it into the playoffs. Big game tonight for your Padres against the Dodgers. They got Wilson versus Gratterall, and then the Sox series on Friday. It's going to be Darvish versus Davis Martin. Oof,
that's a loss for the White Sox.
Saturday, it's going to be Clevinger versus Cease.
We're going to win that one.
And then Sunday, Snell versus Lynn.
Ugh, Ian Snell. Blake Snell's been great. Ian Snell's been terrible.
Blake's been
great. And as one of his great friends is Zach LaVine. They look very much alike, and they're both from Seattle.
There you go.
And they're Dayton sisters, I believe, too.
Oh, kissing cousins and Dayton sisters. Yeah. Classic. The hell was I talking about? Anyways, congrats to your Padres. We'll be with you.
And Marcos, enjoy your time out there at Petco. Anybody who's going to Petco, other recommendations? I would enjoy PB, going to Pacific Beach. Awesome. There's nothing better than taking a nice stroll on PB, MB, any of them, Ocean Beach. All of them. They're great.
Go to a B.
Yeah.
Go out to the SD and go to a B.
I mean, if you just want a just generic taco / burrito, go to Lolita's. There's 8 million there. Go to Rigoberto's. I think there's one on...
Rigoberto's is over there. They have a breaded chicken sandwich, a breaded steak sandwich.
That's not it. And maybe if you have some time during the day, go to TJ, which is Tijuana. Enjoy yourself in Tijuana.
Ooh.
Really cheap fish, delicious food, some culture.
I heard Tijuana's getting a little...
I mean, it's always been that. It's always iffy. It's cartel run, but if you go during the day, you can enjoy yourself.
All right, well, go to Tijuana during the day. Make sure you have your passport.
Dan wants you to go to the San Diego Zoo.
There you go. Go to the zoo. You like the zoo?
Never went when I was out there.
I'm not a big zoo guy. But, neither. Hey, Dan from the 209 saying go to the zoo.
It is one of the best zoos in the world, apparently. But also Griffith Park. Go to Griffith Park. It's an awesome place. Yeah, you could take a couple pictures. You could ride a scooter through Griffith Park, which I did when I was out there. Very picturesque out in Griffith Park, just off of the downtown area.
Go to the Griffith Park, take some pictures, and send Herb on Twitter at Eckernwall23. He's a CHGO White Sox community leader. I'm Sean Anderson. You can follow me on Twitter at Sean underscore W underscore Anderson. Man, I need to take a sip of water. You can follow me on Twitter at that handle. Thanks for Vinny Duber for joining us from Target Field for the past 3 days. That was cool.
And carne asada fries, Marcos.
There you go. And if you want any more SD tips, hit up Twerb on Twitter.
I can be Twerb.
You can follow him at Ectorwall23. Thank you, Steven Nicholas, for producing the show, and thank you all for hanging out with us in the chat. Kevin said he left and got a burrito half hour into the show and came back, and y'all are still talking Sox. That's the job, and we'll be back on Sunday at 2:30. Clark asked if you need to watch the replay. Probably not. Spend your time with your family, loved ones, friends. Go to a bar. Watch something else.
Yeah. Watch paint dry.
Yeah. Maybe do some laundry. Anyways, thank you, Fleetwood Mac, for your 1979 album, Tusk. We'll talk to you on Sunday. Go Sox.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.